Welcome to Green Planet, Blue Planet podcast. I'm here today with J.M. Ryerson. Welcome, J.M.
Hey, Julian. Thanks for having me, brother. Glad to be here and definitely humbled to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. You founded and sold three businesses. You are a leadership coach, a performance coach, but you're also an author. Just a lot of similarities. And yeah, today let's just dive into your story a little bit and let's hear some of your learnings in 20 years in coaching and, performance coaching.
Yeah, brother, when I graduated college, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I hopped into the corporate world and I started down that path. And I quickly realized about 3 years in, I don't love being told where I have to be, when I have to be there, and how much money I can make. So I figured out that corporate probably wasn't the spot for me. As I started interviewing, I found this gentleman that I just connected with. And next thing I know, man, I'm starting into my entrepreneurial path. And he had one office in Northern California. And I told him, I was like, why don't you go nationwide with this? He goes, I'm making good money. Why would I? I said, why not? And so that was really the path that I took, is let me show you how to open one office. And then we went to 8 offices. That was company one. Continued to do this it was in the financial service world, but I didn't know anything about finances, man. That's not my gig. I was good at 2 things. I was good at leadership and building teams. That's like my spot. And so I worked with people on culture and performance and all these things. And then I ended up writing my first book for my 2 sons. My wife and I have 17 and 14 year old sons. And the book was literally just trying to help them not skin their knees as many times as I did. Well, it's called Let's Go Win. And it launched into what Let's Go Win is today, which is really to inspire people to live their best lives. And so now, brother, like you said, I've written a couple books, do the podcast. I get to work with people every single day on inspiring them to live their best lives and working with them on, really obtaining their goals and dreams. And one of the things you and I were talking about off air is, upgrade. It's this idea that it took me 20 years to figure out. People love to upgrade, but they don't like change. And so that's right. Really change the path
is,
I'm on now.
The only thing that's certain, but that at the same time, it's also something that people are not always wanting to embrace. Please do tell us about upgrade. I know there's a short book you wrote about that as well. I recently wrote an article on a little blog post on Medium myself, and putting some of my learnings of the last 10 years, at least into that article, that personal development and change are often seen synonymously, but it's not necessarily all that there is about it, right? Like a big part of personal development, I believe, is to simply accept who we are and accept that deeply and profoundly. How does that correlate with your idea of upgrade? I'm curious to hear more.
Yeah, I think the idea there is there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with JM or Julian. Like, look, you have this inner bright light. Now, sometimes it's been masked, right? We put masks on us so that we try to fit in. And the whole idea of upgrade is to say, look, Julian, there's nothing wrong with you, brother. But if we could upgrade in, I don't know, let's say your physical health, and your life became remarkably better, would you be interested? Well, of course you would. Well, there's no judgment on who Julian is as a person. It's just, would you consider upgrading? And it's so funny, brother, because it is a change. We're going to make some changes to our habits, our lifestyle, but it's just an upgrade. And it's interesting how you watch people accept this idea that there's nothing wrong with me, because there's not. Truly, people walking around this world, there's nothing wrong with them. Maybe they were conditioned to believe certain things that aren't serving them. Okay, cool. Can we remove some of those so that your true light can shine? And that's been the fun piece, whether it's professional athletes or executives that I work with. It's like, look, there is nothing wrong with you. So we're clear. There is just an opportunity to upgrade in our health, our relationships, whatever you want to upgrade. And we do it all the time. We upgrade our cell phones like, once a year. We get upgraded at the rental car.
We use that language for technology. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're cool with that. We'd love to upgrade, but it's a change. But the whole idea is there's nothing wrong. It's just, would you like something a little bit better? And so it's been just an awesome journey. And that's why I ended up writing the third book called Upgrade.
Yeah, I think we're striking on a very important topic, and it, you know, can't be said often enough. It's like, fundamentally, we're not developing or upgrading because something is wrong, broken, needs to be fixed. Now, that can sometimes maybe be the case, but I think there's enough of that kind of messaging out there, right? Like, something's wrong with you, you better get that fixed. That's almost like the way I think a lot of Western society looks at medicine, right? Like, what's wrong with me? But I don't think that's a very healthy, very longevity-based approach to understand ourselves as fundamentally broken. I think it's quite the opposite. We're fundamentally whole the way we are. And then, depending on what we choose, there's more that is possible.
Yeah, like, my mantra is getting better every day. Every single morning, my goal is to just get better every single day. You know, mind, body, soul. That's literally the three areas I focus on. So I'm not saying, hey, there's something wrong with me today. It's just, how can I get a little bit better? Is it a meditation I'm going to do? Is it a book I'm going to read? Is it somebody I'm going to meet? Doing this podcast with Julian, like, I feel like I'm going to be upgraded because I'm going to learn things today. Doesn't mean that yesterday there was something wrong with me. It just means, wow, I've learned something that now I can share with somebody else. And if we have, whether it's called a growth mindset, or you want to call it Kaizen, or you want to call it getting better every day, I don't care, man. Call it whatever you want. But having that yearning to learn, to get better, to experience so much of this vast, huge, amazing world that we have, it's like, could I get a little bit better by talking to somebody that has a different look or lens on life? Yeah, I think I could. And so that's literally my goal every single day, is how can I get just a little bit better? And doing things like this podcast, talking with people that have a different, you know, upbringing than I do. There's just so much to learn. So there's nothing wrong. I just want to get upgraded a little bit.
I'd love to hear, you know, you said how you started out, you know, and how you get eventually into this type of industry. But I'd love to hear how having two kids changed the game for you, and like how that, you know, accelerated you and your purpose.
Well, they are my purpose. There's no doubt about it. And I've heard people say, no, that's not true. They are for me. Like, these two, I have two amazing kids. My wife and I are very blessed. And how it changed everything is it put everything in perspective for me. Now, I lost perspective, so we're clear, in my second company. I was working so hard that I forgot to take care of my health. I forgot to take care of my kids, to really be the best dad that I can be. Now, here's the crazy thing. The company was growing, but at about 15%. The moment I actually got some real harmony in life, work-life balance, whatever you want to call it, guess what? I was working less and we were growing more. So, but it took me almost losing my family, being separated from my wife for a year. And so, to answer your question, my kids are the ones that always bring me back to true north. And the reason I say that is I'll never lie to my kids. And I was writing the first book, and for about 3 years, I had on my bathroom mirror my goals, and it's, you write the book for the kids. And my 8-year-old son at the time walks in. He says, hey, Dad, how's the book going? And he absolutely destroyed me, Julian, in that moment, because I had to look at him in the eyes and be like, I have a little bit of chapter one done after three years. Well, within 6 months, that book was done, because he not only destroyed me, but he also completely inspired me to actually do what I say I'm going to do. So my kids, I learn from them every day. You know, from my oldest son, I learn hard work. He is remarkable at how he can continue to get knocked down and get back up, and it does not one bit deter him from achieving his goals. My youngest son is true love, man. Like, this kid is just pure love. He knows no boundaries, and I just learn from them. So I think what's funny is, as a dad, you want to teach them the best, but the truth is I learn from them every single day, and I'm blessed.
I love it. This is a very, very sweet answer, and you know, you can hear the love in what you're sharing. You know, since you're so passionate about them, and, you know, in general, like, people reaching their full potential, people upgrading, have a question that I often ask. I often ask at the end of the podcast, but I'll you know, throw this one in right at the beginning here. If you were to be able to change the education system, right, now that you've seen not just personally what's being taught and how people are getting industrialized, but especially now that you had two kids go through stages of that, what would you do different? Like, you know, would you do it? Do you have specific ideas? Is there like a general overhaul? We already know that the current industrial education system is simply what it is. Let's just put it this way. What would you do different?
Well, there would be a heck of a lot more freedom involved. I think Norway would be the example I would come closest to. They destroy everybody around the world in their test scores, and they go less than anyone else. They go for like 3 hours a day, and they have no homework. And they've given these kids this ability to want to learn. They have given them the autonomy to say, hey, let's want to learn this, not you have to get X. And I think because I did study abroad, I got to experience some of how the European education system is different than America. And one of the things that I will say is, like, it's not all about a grade there, or at least that was the feel I had. It was really about learning a subject and applying it to life and having true life skills. So how would I change it? It would start with an overall idea of having a true growth mindset. Because to me, whether you graduate college, get an MD, you know, I don't care how far you go, your education never stops. And the moment that you think, okay, I'm good, you're lost, man. You've absolutely lost in life. And that's probably the biggest thing I want my kids to know is, like, look, I want you to do well. I want you to get the A. Of course I do. But rather, I want you to want to learn. I want you to want to expand your mind. And I think the biggest challenge that I'm seeing in the education system is it's a box, and they don't really emphasize creative thinking. They don't celebrate that creative thinking. And if you look around the world at people that are changing the world, it's not people that are thinking 1 + 2 = 3. It's the Elon Musks of the world and the Steve Jobs, where they're thinking thoughts that are crazy to people, but they're changing the world, you know, most of the time for the better, I think. And so that's what I would do. I would give them so much more freedom to say, let's create something amazing and really some true life skills, because so many of the lessons you and I have learned in personal development, in self-growth, in traveling around the countries, is there's a big world out there, and continue to yearn for knowledge. So it's a big question, brother, but there's a ton I think could be done to make our education system so much better.
It's a pretty big question. I do agree. I think it's just really interesting to hear different people's approach to, you know, sometimes the very obvious, and other times just understanding that many of us have similar thoughts about it. And it's just quite interesting how change then actually happens. I want to tap into one specific part of your journey. And, you know, like I know from your writing that's out there, and from what we've talked about previous to this podcast, that adversity is a big topic to you, right? And like overcoming adversity. And well, maybe you can give us a personal example, if that feels in line with you today in this moment. But like, what role does facing discomfort and embracing the uncomfortable actually play in growth and in upgrading and in the way we walk our walk?
Yeah, brother, this is such a, I love the question, because so often the parents of my generation today, we try to protect our kids so much and put them in this bubble so they don't face any challenges and actually have to figure it out, because we want them to be safe and be better. I get the idea, but it's absolutely taking away so much of their power. Let your kids fall off the bike. Now, it's funny for me to say that when I literally wrote my book to help them not skin their knees as many times. Guess what? They are still learning their own, and then they can go and say, oh yeah, dad did write about this, and that's cool if it makes sense to them. But in terms of personal adversity, I mean, probably the most profound and recent example is my dad. He committed suicide about a year and a half ago, and I didn't know that was even a possibility. Mm-hmm. My dad was my hero. My dad is someone that I was extremely close to, as close as a father son can be. And so it's awful, brother. And I want him back every single day. However, the lesson that I learned by not having him is a level of perspective I can never have received without this loss. Now, again, I would never wish this upon anyone listening, to anybody that they have to go through it, because it's horrible. But it has also ignited a fire inside of me to help with mental health, to help people really understand that it's okay to talk about your feelings. Don't stuff them, as my dad did, as I did early in my life. You know, take all these problems and let's just stuff them down. Don't let anybody know that you're in trouble. And then it erupts in this volcanic disaster. Well, that's not really a great thing. And that was truly what my dad was taught. I was taught boys don't cry. And that was literally the first lessons that I learned. Well, that's terrible advice, by the way. It's not true. And so in terms of adversity, that would be the biggest lesson. And he has absolutely ignited a fire inside of me that I always wanted to make the world a better place than I found it. That's been on, you know, my mind and my heart for a long time. But when I lost my dad, it reignited it to a level I couldn't have fathomed. So it's horrible. I miss him. And yet it truly was a gift, and that was the gift that I lost, or that I received in losing him. So, yeah, man, I learned a ton, and I talk about it openly because it actually is very therapeutic and it helps me.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I'm very sorry for your loss, and in fact for anyone's loss, you know, that is in this situation. That's never going to be an easy situation. But you're striking a very interesting point, is that when life moves on, it can both be, you know, pretty brutal, and then at the same time it's just kind of, that's what life does, right? Like there's, you know, sunset, sunrises, and then there's the next day, and we're left with the emotional complexity of who we are. What kind of personal practice do you have to actually feel life fully? Or is that something that you just naturally like waking up every morning, feeling it all, being happy about the next step? Like, guide us a little bit deeper into that process, JM, if you may.
Yeah, and this has been a big process for me, because giving yourself grace to really feel the emotions and be okay with it, that wasn't something that came natural to me. So waking up every morning, a huge part of my routine is journaling. I write often, especially when I don't understand things, because our minds are so incredibly creative and brilliant. They're also incredibly destructive. And so for me, taking pen and paper and just going and just writing, that allows me to truly get whatever's happening upstairs, whether it's true or it's not, I'm going to put it on paper. Because here's the thing, the paper's never come back and been like, JM, you are brilliant. And it's never said, JM, you're an idiot. It doesn't say anything. It just accepts pen to paper. So that allows me to get so much what's going on upstairs onto paper and allows some real clarity in my thinking. After I do that, then it's typically into some meditation, or actually I would go into breathing first, then my mantras, then my meditation. And I think that allows me to truly feel these things and to give myself grace to say, look, maybe you're not waking up the fired up individual you want to be. Maybe today feels like it's going to suck. That's okay, because you have a choice to make. You can have an amazing day today. You have the ability, you have the choice. How are you going to show up today? And having those tools of journaling, meditation, breathing, mantras, it allows me to show up as the best version of myself for my kids, for my employees, for, you know, my wife, whatever hat I'm wearing. But if I didn't have that 2-hour window or so in the morning to really get right, to really get centered, I don't think I could show up as the best version of me. And I certainly didn't for many, many years.
Yeah. You mentioned that earlier, you know, that in one of your companies, you kind of lost maybe the focus on what actually matters, right? I think burnout is still a pretty common topic in our society, in our world, where people are just, you know, so deep in something. And, you know, there's different philosophies out there. Some is like, skip that morning routine, 2 hours, just go straight into work, coffee and let's go. And then there's other people that, you know, me too. I mean, the first 2 hours of the day, you know, it's very rare that you can schedule that with me. I prefer to, you know, wake up slow, find my breath, find my rhythm. I also write and journal a lot because it's just, you know, it's so simple. You said it, like paper always listens, right? And there is something about that. And there's something about that responsibility of encountering people with both an open mind and open heart, even on days where it's maybe a bit tougher. What lessons did you learn from burnout, like, or from, you know, that feeling of like being stretched to thin?
Well, I wasn't clear on my purpose at the time, and I know that word gets thrown around a lot, but the truth is I lost it momentarily, or not momentarily, it was several years. Now, in large part, it was also a byproduct of who I surrounded myself with. When I looked in the mirror, and you've heard it before, I won't be the first, I won't be the last to say the five people you surround yourself with are a direct reflection of you. Whether that's five or it's 10, it doesn't really matter. The people you surround yourself, it's going to rub off. Whatever you're reading, it's going to rub off. Whatever you're feeding yourself, it's going to rub off. And at that time, I wasn't real proud of who I was hanging around. Right now, that was a choice. It's not on them. It was a choice I was making. I wasn't real into taking care of my body the way that I was as an athlete in college, or how I am today. Like, I was just kind of haphazardly feeding my body. It wasn't really intentional. And so all of this ends up coming out as a version of me that I wasn't real proud of, because I wasn't intentional about wanting to be in the best physical health, wanting to be in the best mental health, wanting to be in the best relationships. I was just trying to kill it financially, and I was building the company, and everything will be great when you're making seven figures plus a year. Well, okay, cool. That's one part of the solution perhaps for you, is that you want to make money, but that doesn't mean you're whole. And so it really did come down to, what do you want out of this? Why are you working so hard to begin with? Well, I'm working hard so I can have freedom to spend time with my family. Well, you've created something where you have zero freedom. And if you keep this path on your health, you're going to have zero freedom, because your health is your wealth. And so when I came back and figured out, look, freedom is your number one thing. It's not even close. That is the most important thing to you. Now it's time to get intentional and create that. And so checking in on that, I do it almost every morning. What am I going to do today to create the freedom, love, and abundance that I am seeking in this world? And I get intentional on that.
Yeah, intentionality. I mean, it's very easy to say that, right? But it's actually, I think this is one of the ways humans learn. And, you know, this is the way we learn individually. That's the way we learn about the planet, about ecosystems, about, you know, creating regenerative futures is often by when something goes wrong, when we kind of are faced with the truth of, you know, pieces falling apart. Then we come back and realize, well, was I even intentional about what I was creating? Is it, like, only because I could, do I have to, right? What is possible? Like, these questions arise usually out of, yeah, some form of failure, some form of learning, some form of, at least in my personal life, definitely the time something goes wrong is when I ask myself the most questions, right? Mm. And usually those questions then give birth to whatever comes after it. Thanks for sharing a little bit more insights there. I'm curious, I have like one or two follow-up questions to this, and, you know, if let me know where they land for you. But in that time, like, it sounds like you did, you know, surround yourself with people, maybe not the five people you wanted to actually be measured by, but where were you at with the feeling of loneliness, anxiety, depression? Like, have you experienced that at the time? Did you get help? Like, how did you navigate out of that, right? Like, it's easy for someone like me or you, who's, you know, often out there, you know, sharing with people what is possible, sharing with people, you know, how to upgrade, that upgrading is the way to go. But what not always gets shared is the other side of that, is like, of course we know that feeling of loneliness, of anxiety, of being anxious, of making mistakes. So how did that go for you? And share some insights, Jane.
Yeah, brother, I appreciate it. You know, I didn't really understand what anxiety was. I didn't truly grasp it. until I experienced it one time in New York City, where I was in the city, and it was during this time. And it felt like, oh my gosh, I cannot escape. This is an awful feeling. So I didn't have true understanding, empathy towards people that that's a daily thing. In terms of loneliness, yes. And in terms of depression, yes. And self-medication was 100% a part of it. I was drinking way too much at that time because I was really trying to numb so much of what was going on. I was staying late at work, far later than I needed to, because I was really just avoiding going home. What's interesting, brother, is the solution actually came from being even quieter, because my wife and I ultimately separated, and we were separated for a year. Well, that led to a lot of time to reflect, be alone. What's fascinating for me is I think it's the best thing that could have happened, because I was able to sit with myself, truly look in the mirror and say, you need to own your part. Because you can choose to be a victim, or you can choose to be a victor or be responsible. And I was choosing to be the victim in the beginning, so we're clear. When we were going through the separation, I was pointing the finger at her. It was all on her. Well, that's not true. In any relationship, we have to own our piece. And so when she ultimately said, this isn't working for me anymore, we are going to get separated and more than likely divorced, that allowed me a year of true, like, time to sit, reflect. And I would say the first 3 months was probably a disaster, because I was just at home being the victim, drinking and, telling everybody, woe is me. And after I decided, wait a minute, I don't like where my life is going. It's right. Time to look in the mirror.
It's quite predictable where it would be going, right? If we just keep in that victim blaming mentality, is like, there's really no other way that it can turn out. Like the genius or the magic of life only shows up when we're actually like, oh, wait a second. Well,
yeah, and I think that's equally that rock as responsible, bottom, right? Yeah, I think when you hit that rock bottom, it's like, well, who else is there to blame? Look in the mirror, dude. Like, you're the one that's created this situation. So what are you going to do about it? And I was fortunate. I was fortunate to find the right books at the time, have the right inspiration. You asked about my kids earlier. And one of the biggest points of inspiration for me, being away from my kids 50% of the time, that didn't work for me, man. And so now I was literally losing something that filled my bucket so much. And I did that. So that 9 months after created so many of the habits that still are in my life today. So it was terrible, but I'm so glad it happened.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing, and thanks for diving a bit deeper. I think, you know, this is where these kind of podcast interviews get really juicy, get really insightful, and I kind of maybe, you know, hopefully reach the right person at the right time to say, well, and this is something I've learned in my journey, is we actually don't necessarily do this for other people, because not always are the people that we think we're making this growth for around to actually see us in the growth. We're really doing it for ourselves, and then for how we can show up for the rest of the world after that, right? Not everyone who meets you today knows about all the hardship you went through, right? Not everyone who hires you knows all the difficulties you went through, but that you have gone through them is what allows you to be that present today. It allows you to come from that, like, supercharged kind of perspective.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And if you think of it in terms of playing sports or a video game, if everything went perfect, if everything was like you mastered it, well, guess what? Now you get bored. So the truth is, every time we get our ass kicked and we lose, we actually should say thank you, because that's when we're truly learning. That's when the growth actually happens. To your point, even in this fourth company, it has been such a experience of loss. I've lost every single day because I'm doing something brand new, doing a podcast, never had done it before, writing books, never done it before, building social media, never done it before. And so on a daily basis, it's not like I'm getting victory and sunshine and rainbows. It's like, dude, I'm getting beaten every single day. Now, how do I respond to that? I could certainly go back and just go do something like financial services. I was really good at it. And I made a lot of money at it. but I wasn't fulfilled. So every time I get my butt kicked and I fall down to the ground, I actually say thank you. Like, all right, what are you trying to teach me right now? What do I need to learn? And I'm not saying it's easy. Trust me, I have bad days. And when I really need to go hit the heavy bag, I'm letting that aggression out to be like, okay, man, I'm feeling like a victim. Let me let it out on this bag or this piece of paper. But it is funny how these adversity and these lessons, just say thanks, because it is teaching you what you probably need to see. And I know it sucks sometimes, but most likely, it's what you need. Yeah.
Well, you know, especially if we're assuming that life has some kind of organizing intelligence behind it. So it's like, yeah, what you get is to a degree also what you need. You know, one of the greats in the coaching space, I think, is Dan Sullivan, founder of Strategic Coach, and someone who's, you know, helped entrepreneurs for over 30 years, written several books. He defines freedom as a kind of four vertices idea, right? Being time, money, relationships, and purpose. You kind of touched on money, you kind of touched on purpose, relationships as well, through like the five people that define you, which I agree and don't agree with that one, right? It's like, it's, I don't think the five people we spend most of our time with actually define us, but they are for sure a good reflection. And, you know, depending on where they hang out, that is where a lot of our attention goes to, right? What would you add to that kind of observation of these four elements of freedom? Do you agree with that generally, or do you think there's more to it?
No, I think, I mean, Dan is freaking brilliant, by the way. And if anybody listening, go read Who Not How. I think it's his best work, in my opinion. I mean, he's got other great works, but I think that book Who Not How is great. Yeah. Oh, dude, it's like, yeah, he nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. You know, it's funny. I haven't talked a ton on the time piece, but as we age, you realize how finite we really have. Like, I'll give you an example. My son is now 17 years old and we are doing college visits. What that means is he's about to go to college. And so 90% of my time that I have with this person has been spent. And now he's about to go embark on his own journey. And sure, I'll be a part of it, but I won't have the chance to wake up every day and hug and kiss him and tell him how much I love him. And I think that's when you realize, embrace every single moment you have. And I know it sounds so cliche and people like, okay, but it's true. When your parents were like, time flies by, or like my dad used to always say, the days are long, but the years are short. That's exactly how I feel right now with my son. I'm like, he was just a baby. I mean, I swear, I just blinked and now he's becoming a man. And he's shaving and he's driving and he's about to go to college. I think that time piece, if I could, I don't believe in regret, Julian. It's not something that I go back and think like, oh man, I regret this. No, I don't believe in that. But if there's one thing I would say to myself as a young father or as a kid that's 18, embrace every single moment, because it is so fleeting, the good and the bad. It's going to change. This too shall pass. And I wish that I had just embraced and truly being present every moment. And so that's really what I've been committed to is, you know, especially this year when we're hanging out, instead of watching TV and he's on his phone, I'm on my phone, like truly being with this amazing kid, truly spending time with him, because it's about to be more and more infrequent as our parents have experienced. And so I'm really feeling that piece of that freedom of time. It's finite, man. So I really want to embrace what the time I have with them.
No, I love that. Actually, I just, before we hopped on, got off the phone with my parents, who just had their first grandchild visiting, my sister's daughter. And it's funny because, you know, from their perspective, that's what they shared this morning, that window is even shorter, right? If you're a grandparent, you're only like really exciting maybe the first 10 years. After that, you know, I remember when I was 10, 12, 13, you know, puberty kicks in. It's like, I mean, grandparents are still the best people ever, but you really don't spend a lot of time with them anymore. Like the bulk of that is spent in the first, you know, 6 to 10 years, at least in my experience. And so very much goes on the same, down the same parallel to what you just shared. And, you know, the time piece is also about how much time we actually have for, you know, spending life the way we desire to spend it. I think there's a lot of people out there that this is just still an entirely hard to imagine thing, that you get to completely choose freely how to spend your time, right? Like, we didn't really talk about this a whole lot, but we know AI is going to change the reality of the internet, probably reality at large, but most definitely the reality of the digital grid, right? And so hopefully that allows more and more and more people to become creative, to become, you know, expressions of who they really are and not just do menial tasks and to-dos. And so I think that's a big part of this four elements of freedom, is that time, it's all about spending it with, as you said, with those we love, with those we actually cherish. And then also in a way that we choose, rather than in a way that is pre-scripted for us. And I think that's really how any fundamental change can happen, is when we get to decide, what do we actually want, right? Like, I often talk about a healthy planet, about regeneration on this podcast. I have lots of guests on that are, that's their focus in the world. And I think that question needs to be asked, what kind of planet do we actually want to live on? Do you have thoughts on that? Do you have an answer on that question, on that big kind of bigger question?
I mean, it's a huge question, but one thing I have to touch on, because you said the word I love and the one that I want people to embrace more. We get to. We don't have to do anything. I hear people all the time, I have to go to this job, I have to live here, I have. You don't have to do anything other than water, air, food, shelter. That's it. The rest are choices. Now, that may sound like, oh my gosh, no, I have to. No, you don't. That is a choice you're making. I think when people embrace that, then the world of possibility opens up. Like, for instance, you're coming in from Mexico right now. That's a choice. You get to come in from Mexico, or you get to be in Germany with your folks, or you get to be, these are all choices, and we have them. Our world is absolutely surrounded with choices. Just like you said, taking care of this planet, and we get to truly embrace all the things that are available to us. But are we choosing to do that, or are we choosing to have to do these things because somebody told us to? Are we being miserable at a job for 20 years because we have to? You don't have to do that. And I think if people can embrace that concept alone, so much freedom starts to come to you. So I don't know if I answered your question, but when you talk about get and have, it is one of the biggest lessons that I've embraced, is I get to do these things. I get to do this podcast today, and it's awesome. I don't have to do it. I chose to. So Anyway, man,
I think you totally answered the question, because that's the concept behind it, right? And that's the concept behind any form of change. And our ability to say no to things we don't want to do, we don't see as fitting into our worldview, or don't see as fitting into the reality we actually want to create. I think a fundamental piece there is also that life is not a video game, right? Life is not something you just sign in and consume. It is a co-creative experience. And so who we're being is actually, it matters, you know? It matters, at least in the worldview I hold and my learnings and my understanding. How do you teach people this power of saying no? I know that, you know, in a lot of client and entrepreneurial relationships that I have, it's often about how to set boundaries, right? Like, how to be able to turn my phone off after 7 p.m. How to not check email until 10 a.m. Like, for many people, this is really hard, right? Because we've become so ingrained with that. That's just an example. But I think the underlying phenomena is the ability to say no, the ability to actually prioritize other things.
Yeah, the most important lesson, and I hope people hear this, is every time you say yes, you're saying no to something else. Mm-hmm. So every time you say yes to, I get people all the time, I can't say no, I don't want to hurt their feelings. Well, you're hurting your child's feelings, you're hurting your spouse's feelings, you're hurting your own health. Like, because you're saying yes all the time, you are saying no in other ways. And when people really grasp that concept, they're like, oh, wait a minute, you're right. And like you said, setting these boundaries to say, not only is it okay to say no, it's the most important thing for you to show up as the best version of you. If you don't have that ability to say no, you are going to run haphazardly through life, and it won't be that fulfilling. Saying no is one of the greatest gifts that you can give yourself. So I hope people hear that loud and clear. Every time you say yes, you're saying no to something else. And just think of it. Go through a day and check in. I'm saying yes to my email. Okay, now I'm saying no to spending time with my family. I'm saying yes to social media in the morning. Now I'm saying no to taking care of my mental health first. And it goes really deep, man. It is such an important concept. And yeah, setting boundaries is uncomfortable, quote unquote, but truly discipline equals freedom. And again, everything goes back to freedom for me. So having that ability to be disciplined enough to say no allows me to have the freedom. And that's truly my purpose.
I love it. That was some real gold there that you just shared. I want to wrap this episode with, you know, I know you're a world traveler as well. You said that you grew up in different places. If you were to highlight three places and maybe give us at least one experience in one of those places, what are some of your favorite spots in the world? What did you get to do there? How do you think back of those places and why?
It's a fantastic question. I'm going to steal it and I'm going to start using it because I love this. My three favorite countries in the world, not in order, but it would be Thailand, Costa Rica, and Scotland, all for different reasons. Yeah. You know, it comes down to really the feel, the culture. And if you look at Thailand and Costa Rica, totally different culturally, but very similar in some regards. Mm. These people, for the most part, they don't have a lot material-wise, but they are the most generous, kind, caring, compassionate human beings. And I like to travel there. It may not be the fanciest place in the world compared to some of the five-star, but that's not what I'm there for. So my father-in-law's Thai, and Buddhism has been a huge part of my life for the greater part of 20 years that I've had him in my life. And when I go to Thailand, you can really feel that Buddhist feel come through. People treat others as they would like to be treated. Now, that's not just for Buddhism. That's all religions if you think about it. But I really think that that country embraced that idea. So, yeah, man, every time I've gone to those countries, I just feel welcomed, I feel embraced, and I feel truly at peace. So Costa Rica is just awesome for so many things outside and outdoors. And then Scotland, I just think the people are awesome. They're fun, and they there's just so much to do and see and experience. And so, I don't know. Those would be my three top in the world.
I like it. I definitely like it. I like the mix. There's something about cultures that are similar but so distant, right? Places that are just different corners of the world, different beliefs, different backgrounds, obviously different landscape, different people. That kind of spurred a follow-up question before we wrap here for today. So, you know, you mentioned Buddhism there briefly, and I think it's important to come back to faith and spirituality at times without it needing to be denominational in a certain way, right? Like, what did you learn from Buddhism on your journey? Like, your father-in-law being Thai and having that background, like, what kind of insights did you learn that you think, like, you're uniquely equipped for based on that constellation?
Yeah, I like how simple it is. So I like how it really is like, treat others as you'd like to be treated. Quiet the mind to really find answers. I mean, these are some basic principles, but they have these rituals that they do. In fact, it's funny. My father-in-law is from Thailand. He is a Buddhist and he doesn't meditate very rarely. Yet for me, I probably meditate 2 to 3 times a day. Why? Because I get so fulfilled from it. Now, these Eastern practices, you know, like Taoism is another one that I think it's just kind of common sense. Like, don't think in terms of negative thoughts and don't send hatred and pain and war out, because that's what's going to come back to you. And so I like the simplistic version. And the other thing that I like is it's not a judgment. Like, if you choose to be, like, I was raised Catholic. Cool, man. Buddhism isn't better than Catholicism, and Catholicism isn't better than Buddhism. If it makes you a better person, then embrace that. And that's really been my journey, at least from religion standpoint, is If it makes you a better person, fantastic. But it doesn't make your religion any better than anyone else's. It really is it's a spiritual journey for you. So, yeah, man, it's just, and to go to some of those amazing, to see some of, when you go to, I'm failing on the word right now. When you go into the Buddhist, temples, geez, I couldn't think of temple. When you go in and you see these amazing buildings and this community, it's just unique, man. And it's something that I feel extremely at home and comfortable with.
Right on. Yeah. Thank you so much for the insights, the nuggets of wisdom, your journey, you know, some of the adversities you went through, some of the learnings, definitely your passion, your purpose, family, upgrading, all of the things you shared today, JM. Is there something you want to make sure to say before we check out today?
You know, the big thing I would say, I hope people show up as themselves, truly show up as you. It's probably the flagship keynote speech that I give, because truly being authentic, taking the masks off, there's such an amazing bright light in every single one of us. And just because it might be, you know, some masks have been put over, take them off. Just be you. It's so freeing. So that would be the last thing. And Julian, thank you for having me, brother. You ask incredibly insightful questions. I just appreciate you, man. You're an awesome dude.
Thank you. And right back at you. Great to have you on, JM.
Thank you.